Welcome back to Booze and Buffy, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel of the Series one by one. There are no spoilers for future episodes. We'll be discussing details from this episode and all previous episodes. Living in the basement in my Justin Timberlake era, I'm Harrison.
And I'm Jason, and I think I'm going to have a problem being distracted by how handsome D.B. Woodside is. Harrison, what episode are we watching this week?
Yes, we are watching Buffy Season 7, a.k.a. the final season of Buffy.
We made it!
Episode 1, Lessons. This is the one where Sunnydale High is rebuilt, and Dawn must face some of the horrors that it can unleash.
Lessons was written by Joss Whedon and was directed by David Solomon and originally aired on September 24th, 2002.
Hit it. Jason.
Harrison.
Welcome back.
Oh, so glad to be back.
Season 7, baby.
Yeah.
We've had some trouble scheduling this. I want to, real quick, before we were supposed to record this episode 2 weeks ago, and I want to read the texts that I sent to Jason that were just a little unhinged the day that we were supposed to. And, like, not the most unhinged thing I've ever sent to someone, but
Jason maybe the texted, most unhinged thing he's ever sent to me.
Jason texted me that morning, still want to record today. And I sent him this, like, wall of texts back to back to back. IDK, I overslept and was super late for work and I'm feeling all discombobulated. Next text. And my stomach is all out of sorts. Next text. I'm not having the best day so far. Next text. I'm literally lying on the floor of my office right now. I was not kidding. I was literally
no, I didn't think you were down.
And then, you know, just some life stuff prevented us from getting started, but we're here.
Some emergency pruning of the of the backyard.
Yeah, had to get a lot of housework done in a very short amount of time. But I'm glad we did, because it really got us at the kick in the ass we needed to, like, finally finish unpacking some boxes since we moved in. You know, in The Incredibles, when Mrs. Incredible's like, we have finally moved in. She's like, we moved in 3 years ago. And she's like, yes, but I just unpacked the last boxes.
Yeah, that's a true thing.
So real.
That is a true thing.
So anyway, Jason, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking some classic Booze and Buffy vintage Franzia red wine. Dark right delicious. Out of the box.
Yes, you are. I've got a Rheingeist Blood Orange Bubbles. Which I'm gonna pop open right now.
There it is.
Ooh, crickle and sazzle. Anyway.
Sure, those are words.
I am gonna do a toast, but the toast comes with a bit of a story.
All right.
So Jason, do you remember Shaq, who was in Spam-A-Lot with us?
Oh yeah, Shaq.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
So he's done a lot of, Kentucky Shakespeare, obviously. He was just in the show that we did, that is currently running at my job. And I knew he was in the show, obviously, because I talked to the cast a lot and the crew about how to get tickets and all that stuff. But we had our preview performance a couple weeks ago, and we always have a little reception afterwards. And I went up to him at the reception. I was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. Because that was like, what was that, like 2012?
2013.
Yeah. And I was like, we were in Spam-A-Lot together. And he just had this, like, such an outpouring of love and affection for not just me, but, like, all of us involved in that production. And I wasn't expecting. He was telling me all about how, like, how influential that show was. He was, like, fresh out of high school, and it was the first non-high school show he had ever done. And, you know, now he's working professionally with, like, you know, professional companies. And, you know, he was asking about different people, how they were, and all of this. And it was just, it was so, such an unexpected, like, I expected, you know, this like, oh yeah, nice to see you, how are you? Not this.
The typical.
Yeah, but it was just like, it just reminded me that, like, you know, this is a person who I haven't spoken to in almost 11 years. And, you know, I liked, and when I would see him in stuff at Kentucky Shakespeare, stuff, I was like, oh yeah, he's a great guy and he's doing a great job. But I totally underestimated the impact that doing that one show with us had had on his life. And just, it was such a, we had just a lovely conversation. And it was just, it just reminded me that, like, you never know what you're putting out into the world, positive or negative. And so that was my toast to the positivity that we can put out into the world, even if we don't realize that's what we're doing.
Into Shaq.
Cheers. The can to glass was not the most satisfying clink sound.
Well, we'll have to coordinate on the next one then.
All right, let's talk lessons.
Mm-hmm.
We start off the episode, where else but in Istanbul?
Yeah, Buffy's well known for starting episodes in Istanbul. But a famous band did once tell me that it was Constantinople.
True. We do get some very stereotypical Middle Eastern music. We have a young woman being chased by hooded figures. She is unfortunately caught, tossed off of a roof, and then stabbed, presumably to death. But we do cut away from this short but kind of intense action prologue.
Yeah, and I hope you guys were hoping for an explanation for that, because that didn't come this episode.
No! But then we cut to where we usually begin our seasons of the show.
In the graveyard. In Sunnydale. In America.
Dawn is training with Buffy. We have a vampire, fresh vampire crawling out of the grave, and Buffy instructs Dawn that, you know, she asks, like, who has the power? And Dawn's like, I have the stake. And she's like, the stake is not the power. What do you think of this scene? I like it a lot. I think it's...
I do. I like that it does follow up with where Buffy and Dawn were both mm-hmm. at the end of season 6.
Yeah.
Because what we had at the end of season 6 wasn't an ending that we were used to.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that Buffy has taken, like, in earnest that she wants to finally let Dawn into her world.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. she's been trying to keep Dawn out of, but in all fairness, Dawn's been in since she was, you know, blooped into existence.
Yeah. Listen, the girl is almost 3, Buffy. You got to
start training her.
Yeah. I think this is great because I love... I think Buffy does a great job of letting go of the reins a little bit and letting Dawn fail, but also giving her good feedback and, you know, telling her what she did well. And, you know, when the time comes for Buffy to intervene, she does.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a little lighthearted, like, you know, I missed the heart the first time too, but just the once. and it's... It does seem
like vampires are nothing compared to what's coming.
Yes. But it seems like Buffy's picked up a lot from Giles.
Yeah. But also I think it is like she can talk to her the way that, you know, maybe Giles never could. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a very different relationship.
Very different. But yes, they discuss how... I just also want to point out that the vampire gets stuck in his grave. Very funny. But yes, they discuss how there's something much worse coming than vampires, than demons, something that is returning. And that, of course, is high school.
Sunnydale High.
This episode has a lot of kind of throwback vibes to season one. The first three seasons, but season one in particular, I would say. And in many ways, I do think this is kind of an interesting... Dawn is technically a sophomore. I don't know why I'm saying technically. She is a sophomore transferring to Sunnydale High, just like her sister did way back in season one. So I like that parallel. And of course, we'll have a parallel of her forming her own little group of friends.
Her own trio? No, maybe you shouldn't use that one.
But I love the return of Sunnydale High. I think it's a smart way to take your final season.
It sets the stage for bringing the whole legacy of the show together.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I really enjoyed that in All Good Things, the season finale or the series finale of Star Trek: The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's incorporated is Picard, like Captain Picard, is like going through time, specifically three different time periods. Mm-hmm. One of which is the first episode of TNG. So it is kind of cool to see like how they've gone from the beginning to what is the end.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of value in a show going into its final year, especially if it knows it's its final year, to be able to incorporate that sort of retrospective. And I think Buffy does it here without it coming across as too maudlin or too self-servicey.
It never feels like it's like, you know, just shoving it in your face.
Yeah.
It's very, very subtly done.
Yeah. Meanwhile, over in jolly old England, specifically Devon, is that what?
I'm just now remembering that they actually did tell us where
it
was.
I think it was and, Devon.
I may have still been eating my sandwich.
Just fun fact. The scenes set in England are filmed at Anthony Head's actual home.
Beautiful home.
Yes, that it's a farm he owns. And the horse he's riding in the opening scene, or in his introductory scene, is his own horse. And the horse's name is Otto.
Aww. Good horse name.
But it is a good horse name. Willow it tells me right here, Westbury, England.
There you go.
Willow has been there for the last several months, presumably since the immediate aftermath of the season 6 finale. She has been studying with a coven of witches.
I'm assuming it's the coven that gave Giles the powers to confront her.
That is what my assumption would be, too. This scene does seem like it is trying to walk back some of the last season's less successful decisions about how the magic works. So Giles specifically says, you know, this is not an addiction. The magic is a part of her. And she discusses how everything's connected. The magic, everything in the world. She brings a flower that's native to Paraguay through the earth.
Which I feel like is the more traditional view of Wicca.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. This feels, you know, she's not mentioned in the episode, but this discussion and this philosophy of magic feels very much like Tara,
mm-hmm.
How she viewed magic. So I do like to see, in the aftermath of everything that happened in season 6, Willow embracing that. She is concerned about spiraling out of control again. She's concerned about people being frightened of her. Giles asks her if she wants to be punished, and oh my goodness, with the loud cars today, Giles asks her if she wants to be punished, and she just says she wants to be Willow again. And Willow, I want you to be Willow again, too. We were frustrated with you last year. You made a lot of poor choices, but we still care about you.
There were a lot of poor choices made that weren't just Willow.
Sure. Xander, we see, is doing very well for himself. He's got a spiffy new car, spiffy new suit that is that just really unfortunate early 2000s, like, bulky, like, loose, doesn't fit very well, but not gonna blame him for the 2000s.
If he was still with Anya, he probably would have dressed a little bit better.
But he has been, his construction crew that he manages has been working at the school. He brought some schematics, some blueprints, as it were, of both the original school and the new school. And they discover that the Hellmouth, which used to be under the library, is now under the principal's office. And they conclude that the principal must either be evil or in quite a bit of danger.
Yeah, and they very much are interested in who this principal is, because who would want to take this job? After all, as Xander remarks, the last two principals were eaten.
Yes. R.I.P. Principal almost, Flutie and Snyder.
Almost one of them certainly by Xander.
Buffy goes to school with Dawn, where she meets Principal Wood. Principal Wood, played by D.B. Woodside. Do you want to just...
I
think Jason had a little awakening in this episode.
I mean, this man is beautiful.
Yes.
And I guess I hadn't seen him in things for a while. First thing I ever saw him in, and I'm pretty sure that... I think it's season... It's either season 5 or 6 of 24. Mm. That would have been while I was still in high school, I'm pretty sure. But, he actually played David Palmer's younger brother. Dave Palmer, played by Dennis Haysbert. And probably the role that he's most well known for outside of Allstate commercials.
Yeah, I remember seeing him on... he had a small recurring role on Parenthood.
Okay.
Because I remember going, it's that guy. And then... he was on Lucifer.
Okay.
Which I never watched. But I remember, like... I feel like I remember seeing ads for it and seeing him, like, in the ads.
This man is beautiful. Yeah. Like, I mean... I'm normally not distracted this much.
That's my job.
By any like really attractive character, but this actor in particular is just, and also like, whereas Xander does not look too great in his suit.
Oh yeah!
Holy crap! Does D.B. Woodside?
Yeah, rocking it.
But his character's name BTW is Principal Robin Wood.
Yes. He gets to put his foot in his mouth a bit when he says that, to his credit, he does say that Buffy looks too young to have such a grown-up daughter.
It's so funny because that's like kind of the flip of what that pickup line usually is. It's like, oh, I mean, I didn't realize you came here with your sister. Say that to like a mom. And so it's kind of funny that they do the inverse of it.
Buffy is horrified and Dawn has a mixed reaction of like shock and humor. I also just want to props to the costumers and the hair and makeup people, because this Argyle sweater on Dawn looks great. It feels so her. Mm-hmm. Like I absolutely can see Dawn at the mall seeing that sweater and going, that's what I want.
Yeah.
And then her hair just looks great. She's got a light curl at the end. It's nothing too flashy or ostentatious, but just looks really good.
Good first day of school out.
Yes, exactly. And it does feel... She looks more mature. Mm-hmm. Than we've seen her in the past, and which is a reflection of her role in the show now.
And that might be a decision on the part of the show's creators as well.
Yeah.
You know, we've mentioned before how season 5 and even season 6 Dawn is almost like not only not only portrayed, but also just kind of like characterized as almost a, like, what, 10-year-old is what the original plan was.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, we know that she's only three.
Oh, I did neglect to mention that Dawn, or Buffy, has a first day of school present for Dawn.
But we don't see it.
A weapon, as they call it. So, Dawn goes to class, and Buffy decides to wander the school. That's how you know it's 2002. But she goes into a bathroom where she finds... I'm just going to go ahead and call it a talisman, because I don't even know what you would call it outside of that. But a dead girl and a dead janitor appear and threaten her, saying that Buffy wasn't able to protect them. She won't be able to protect Dawn either. I really like the first appearance of the dead girl in the mirror. I think it's really effective. The subsequent, almost immediate... attempt at a jump scare with the janitor falls completely flat, and I don't buy Buffy cowering in a corner, especially not in season 7.
I do think the scene with the student and the pencil in mm-hmm. the classroom at Dawn is pretty good.
I think that one's great. That's actually my favorite. I think that's the most effective use of these three characters. I don't mind this A plot. It's a nice, soft way to ease us into the season. And as we mentioned, it does feel like a kind of throwback to an earlier season. I wish these three characters were people we'd seen before. I wish they were previous.
Instead, they got the Andrew treatment.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Like, I think this A plot would have hit way harder if. The girl mentions she was killed by a werewolf. We presume Oz. But it could also... Oh, no. Never mind. I was going to say, it could be the werewolf that turned Oz, but that was his cousin, who was a baby. I don't remember how many victims of Oz's we actually get to see on screen, but, like... Yeah, just... actual people that we saw Buffy unable to save in the previous season.
In all fairness, though, the girl does mention near the end of the episode that they're the ones who are forgotten.
True.
So, it just goes to show just how dangerous that school is, that Buffy couldn't save everybody.
Even Class of 99, which had the lowest mortality rate. we do get to briefly check in with Anya. She is at the coffee shop. What's the coffee shop's name?
I almost said Jitters. Like, that's not
that's
right.
The Flash.
That is the Flash.
Buffy coffee shop name. The Espresso Pump. That's right.
Okay.
Anya is there with Halfrick. They're having some coffee and listening to some young lovers singing a sappy love song, which Anya describes as depressing.
Oh, good old Anya.
Yes. Though we do learn in this scene from Halfrick that Anya's vengeance work has not been quite up to snuff.
They call her soft serve.
She is not encouraging people to make creative wishes, and she's not delivering when they are. A woman wished for her boyfriend to be turned into a frog. Anya made him French. I'm pretty sure that frog is an offensive term that I think British people use against the French.
I did not know that. I'm just learning that, if that's true.
I think that's true.
Okay.
Halfrick says, you know, you used to be, like, hardcore, you know. I remember what you did to Mrs. Cholgosh, which is
a...
The Crimean War. If any listeners, Mrs. Cholgosh is a reference to Leon Cholgosh, who... successfully...
He killed William McKinley.
Yes, I was like, I couldn't remember if he was an attempted assassin or a successful... He successfully killed President William McKinley. Yes, I do know that because of the musical Assassins.
Right there with you. But that led to Teddy Roosevelt becoming president, right? Am I right about that?
That sounds right.
Well, it happened in 1901. Again, I know that because of Assassins.
There's a whole song about it. It's a very catchy song.
Well, you know that that's my favorite musical of all time.
Yeah, I do. And it's an excellent favorite musical to have. I think it's an underrated gem that succeeded by Teddy. Oh, Teddy, what a scam.
Way to go, Jason, knowing the history.
The history. But she explains to Helfrich explains to Anya that, you know, something big is coming, and now is not a good time to be a good guy. Anya also says, like, what is this? Some sort of intervention? Shouldn't all my demon friends be here? And Helfrich says, honey, they are. Just like, oh.
So, I don't know if this was just the actress who plays Helfrich, if this was just her saying it, or if it was a deliberate choice in either script or direction. But she does refer to Anya as Anya. All before this, she's like been referring to her as Anyanka. So I'm kind of wondering, if maybe she's got like her view of Anya. She's like, oh, you've never really stopped being human. Yeah. You're just like...
I had not caught that, but that's a great... Because you're right. She, even when Anya was human, she exclusively called her Anyanka. Mm-hmm. So calling her Anya here does feel like a either subconscious or deliberate reflection of Halfrick's own kind of opinion of her slipping.
Yeah.
Which is, oh gosh, it's kind of sad.
I mean, Anya's had a rough go of it these last couple seasons.
Yeah. So. Dawn is in class. She is, they're doing an icebreaker exercise. She tells the class that she likes to dance.
She's honestly killing it.
She's crushing it. She likes music, particularly Britney Spears' early work before she sold out. So basically her finger painting and her macaroni art, very underrated.
What's your favorite Britney Spears song?
Womanizer.
Okay. That was kind of like the beginning of her comeback.
Uh-huh. And I have to say this. I'm not a big Britney fan. I enjoy Britney Spears. And I'm happy that she's free. And I hope that she's getting what she needs in her life. But, you know, there's like a handful of her songs that I really like. I like Womanizer. I think that's a fun one. I like Toxic a lot.
I've got a very soft spot in my heart for Lucky.
See, I don't really know that one. I know
that's a "She's so lucky, she's a star, but she cry, cry, cry." Wow, okay, I feel like that was one of the bigger ones. Because I can't remember if that was from her second or first or second album, and I can just hear both Ben Gerhart and Michael Holiday screaming at me, like, "How do you not know that?"
Listen,
huge Britney fans there.
My preferred artist.
Not everybody can be Pink.
Yeah. I'm not going to... Like, I don't dislike her by any means. And
no,
like,
no, I'm not saying you do.
But I like Me Against the Music a lot.
Oh, with Madonna?
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah, that song rocks.
I don't even really like Madonna very much.
Wow, okay. Let's pump these brakes before you say something that's going to piss off what I assume is a large amount of our audience.
Listen, I'm a Florence and the Machine kind of gay. If you're not kind of witchy, I don't really care.
That's like saying you're a chapstick lesbian.
I saw your entry in the pool, Annie. Were you trying to be hurtful or just disgusting? disgusting.
Anywho.
Unfortunately, Dawn's chance to make a good impression in front of her classmates are torpedoed by Buffy bursting into the class.
Excellent word choice, by the way. Torpedoed.
Thank you.
They weren't just ruined. Torpedoed.
But it's like you can see people were laughing at her jokes. You could tell that people were like, she's a cool girl. Yeah. She was about to be popular. And then Buffy bursts in. Dawn, you're in danger! No fucking chill.
It's not safe! You're in danger from smoking!
So yeah, Buffy does realize that she's fucked up, and she kind of awkwardly, like, just kind of shuffles out.
And unfortunately, Dawn loses any chance she has to, like, possibly salvage this when she has a very similar experience that Buffy did of the guy next to her being also a kind of a rotting corpse and asking for a pencil and then stabbing her in the eye with it. But, and so Dawn, of course, freaks the fuck out, as who wouldn't? Some dead person just tried to stab you with a pencil, and she realizes that it didn't actually happen.
She passes it off as it was a bee. She's allergic. It's gone now. But she excuses herself to the restroom, and it's clear now that one of the students is like, just like her sister.
I guess it runs in the family. Asshole.
But luckily, in the restroom, she meets Kit, who is crying in one of the stalls. Kit's got a kind of an alternative feel. She's giving Janice.
She's very goth. Mm-hmm. She's very, like, punky goth vibes.
Yeah.
Probably listening to some Red Jumpsuit Apparatus.
Uh-huh. I don't know who that is, but I trust you.
They did Face Down.
Sure.
Do you feel like a man when you push her around?
I've heard that one.
Hang on, let me see when that came out. I might be, like, getting the dates wrong.
She listens to a lot of the Cranberries, probably.
That's probably,
I remember one time, it was shortly after Dolores O'Riordan.
We're a little early for Red Jumpsuit Apparatus then. But she would definitely, that would be her vibe.
Yes.
Just they don't exist at the moment.
It was shortly after Dolores O'Riordan passed. I was talking to John. We were just talking about the Cranberries in general. And I was just like, John, I just have a feeling that when she was a teenager, your sister was really into the Cranberries. And he was like, yes. You nailed it. Like,
I'll still rock out to Zombie every now and
again. It's a fucking great song. It's a banger. Kit has also been seeing things. She tells Dawn she won't believe her. Dawn's like, oh, I will believe a lot. I'm only 3 years old. A god once tried to kill me so that she could open up all the portals in the universe. Like, I'm sure you saw a ghost.
Talk about an icebreaker.
I'm Dawn. I'm a mystical ball of energy that was fashioned into human form by some monks. Also, my sister is the reason you're not all dead 5 times over.
And then, like, you know.
Also, I like to dance.
And then this kid stands up like, I'm Jeremiah. I like football. I can't really follow that.
So, unfortunately, as they are trying to leave the bathroom, the lights start sparking. Hands shoot up from the ground.
That's pretty
cool. Pull them through. This episode is really embracing the horror movie vibe in a way that is very enjoyable. We this this smash cuts into them being pulled down into the basement, smash cuts to Willow kind of screaming with Giles holding her. She's on the ground. She's just had a vision. She says she saw the Earth's teeth, the Hellmouth. That she tells Giles that, yes, everything's connected, but not everything is good. And that the Hellmouth is going to open and swallow us all.
So a lot of foreboding.
Yeah.
The emphasis on the Hellmouth, mm-hmm. You know, that's obviously, again, hearkening back to the first episode, which is called Welcome to Hellmouth. Mm-hmm. I was honestly just thinking about how much I enjoy TV series whose first episode is not called pilot.
Me too.
I don't even know what made me think of that, because it wasn't Welcome to Hellmouth. It was, I was thinking about how Grey's Anatomy, mm-hmm. They typically do song titles as their episode names. Okay. And the first episode is called First Cut is the Deepest.
Nice.
Which, one, great song reference, but also, in a show about surgical interns starting at a hospital, you probably couldn't have nailed it any better. Nice.
I was thinking, like, Star Trek usually, like, as you were mentioned TNG earlier, their pilot first episode is Encounter at Farpoint. Mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine is The Emissary.
Voyager's Caretaker.
The Caretaker, thank you. I was like, I know Voyager has one as well. You know what's funny? Despite of those three, I say this as someone who enjoys Voyager, but of that era of Star Trek and that those three shows in particular that ran more or less simultaneously, Voyager's the weakest. But also of
it has the best pilot.
It has the best pilot because TNG and Deep Space Nine's pilots kind of suck.
I remember looking so forward to starting Deep Space Nine because I had heard incredible things about it. And, you know, it was through quite a bit of TNG. And then I watched that first episode. And the guys that I was living with at the time, they were like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll watch this too. They were like, watch that first episode. And it was bad.
It's bad.
It, like, they're... I'm trying to think of, like, a better representation, like a better analog to of just like, oh, when you look at the series overall, it's fantastic, but that first episode is bad.
I was gonna say, I think on the opposite spectrum of that, I remember Smash. Do you remember Smash?
I do remember it. I never watched it. Smash, but it was pretty popular when it first came out.
Smash had one of the best pilots I've ever seen. Like, a really stunning pilot that I was like, wow, I am so fucking stoked to watch the rest of this show. This cast is outstanding. They've got this music that they're writing for it is incredible. That little plot line where Deborah Messing wants to adopt a baby or something, that's weird and doesn't really fit in with the rest of it, but sure, you know. I have never seen a series go from amazing pilot to pile of dog shit so fast. That show was so great when it was about people creating a musical, and so terrible when it was about their soap opera lives, and it wanted to be about their soap opera lives so badly. It was so disappointing. Anyway, down in the basement of Sunnydale High, Dawn and Kit run into another student. His name is Carlos. He came down to have a cigarette. Dawn is in danger.
She was in danger
of
smoking! But he was right! She's always right!
He got attacked by the dead janitor. He didn't realize he was dead at first. He didn't get a good look at him. He just thought it was a pissed off teacher or something. They are immediately confronted by our trio of dead people. They tell them that everyone dies at Sunnydale High. They can't be protected. They are going to die too. But Dawn's like, I have a weapon. And she pulls out the first ever cell phone seen on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, oh, really? And then, but then I was just like, oh, the cell phone we've only had is an Angel. That's yeah. The one that he can't work.
I was going to say, Angel Investigations have had cell phones since season one.
Streets ahead.
Buffy calls Dawn. Dawn calls Buffy. Buffy is at that moment talking to Principal Wood.
One of several times that she's just like running into Principal Wood and talking to him.
He's like, you know, I actually didn't let on earlier. I know a bit more about you than I kind of let on. You,
the school board recommended that he look into her file. Yes.
Hilarious. But like, they're like, we can't prove it, but we strongly suspect she blew up the school. Yeah. And they be wrong.
In all fairness, Giles. Haven't we been looking into her file for years now?
That's just what this is.
For like 6 years.
Buffy gets the call from Dawn, she's like, it's my dog, Walker. And then Buffy go, 3 dead? And Wood's like, oh my god, your dogs are dead?
Immediately assumed that 3 of her dogs are dead. She's like, I have to go. Like, yeah, take care of that dog tragedy.
That was excellent delivery from him.
I think we're gonna like Principal Wood.
I want to see more. Buffy goes down to the basement. She confronts the spirits. She deduces that they are trying to get between her and a specific door. She opens said door to find a really fucked up Spike.
You can tell he's fucked up because of his hair. He does look like early NSYNC era is Justin Timberlake.
His shirt is it's unbuttoned, and you can see dark, long, deep cuts across his chest and stomach, and particularly concentrated over his heart. And he's just kind of rambling, and then he's like, duck. And she's like, what? There's a duck? And then she gets hit in the head. My second favorite use of confusion about a duck in television. The first being, of course, Sally Sparrow, duck now. Have you seen the meme that's Sally Sparrow, duck now, and then the next frame is Carrie Mulligan, but her face has been replaced with a duck? excellent episode. She locks herself into the room with Spike. She first suspects Spike also might be an apparition. Important to recognize that Buffy has not seen Spike since the events of Seeing Red, which were presumably 4 months, maybe, if we're assuming that that was in May and the school year is starting in September.
Mm-hmm.
She sees the scratches around his heart. He explains that was his attempt to cut it out. Buffy has no fucking clue what that means, but we do.
He's not talking about his heart.
Buffy gets a call from Dawn again. The ghosts have isolated them in this room, but they're not there anymore.
And they're not ghosts, and, according to Spike.
Yeah, Buffy's like, they're not ghosts, they're not zombies. And Spike just does have a moment of lucidity where he's like, they're manifest spirits raised by a talisman. Any 4-year-old could tell you that. So you know, he's still there. Buffy's basically just like, okay, bye. She calls Xander. She recalls the talisman that she saw in the bathroom. She explains to him where to find it and to destroy it. She goes off to find Dawn. Meanwhile, Dawn is being very resourceful. They need to find a weapon. Carlos finds some bricks. Don empties out Kit's bag, puts the bricks in. I like this, that they're all three contributing. I mean, Kit's contribution is has a bag, but you know.
That's important.
That's important. But immediately we're seeing the three of them cooperating together, and much in the way we saw Buffy, Xander, and Willow do back in the first episode. Buffy, Dawn does get a good hit in, but is quickly overpowered. Luckily, Buffy shows up, and she's just fucking cracker jacks with this brick bag. Mm-hmm. Like, is giving prey, which we were watching last night when she's got the axe on the rope.
That movie's so damn enjoyable.
So fucking good. But, Xander does find the talisman. He manages to fight off the ghost girl, breaks the talisman, and the spirits disappear. Oh, this is fine. Like, it's pretty standard Monster of the Week stuff. Nothing that's really blowing my mind, but
I guess, like, we're so kind of... We're still coming off of, like, season 6, where everything was either an existential trauma or, you know, Willow turning evil.
Yeah, finally, it's just some dead people in a school.
It's like, we can handle this. Yeah.
So, Buffy, Buffy tells Kit, Don, and Carlos, you know, you gotta stick together, be prepared, have each other's backs, and she sends them off to class. Principal Wood is very impressed. He had mentioned, he tells her that Kit and Carlos were potentially trouble students. And she's managed to get them to socialize and actually go to class. So he offers her a job at the school. They have a little bit of money set aside for
an outreach program.
He hastens to say that it's not the guidance counselor position, which Buffy is in no way qualified for. Mm-hmm. But to have someone at the school who's closer to their age, the students can talk to. Do I find this remotely realistic? No. Do I think this is the kind of job that Buffy would thrive in? Yes. Buffy likes to help people.
And it's very much an extension of, like, because now she's... Because she opened up the episode mm-hmm. and the season with finally becoming a mentor to Dawn.
Yeah.
And now she gets to be that to other people as well.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see her in this role and how that pans out. It also helps that she now has a reason to be at the school every day and keep an
eye out. Guess where our primary setting's going to be?
Then we get this final scene. And I, luckily, the Buffy Wiki has it here for me, so I'm going to read it. So, earlier in the episode, I just want to point out that when Buffy locks herself into that room with Spike, he says, it's just the three of us.
Which Buffy doesn't even notice. Yeah,
she's like, okay, you're being real weird, dude. Your vibes are fucked. But we end the episode back in the basement with Spike. Spike says, the thing is, I had a speech. I learned it all. Oh, God, she won't understand. She won't understand. And then we see Warren. And he says, of course she won't understand, Sparky. I'm beyond her understanding. She's a girl. Sugar and spice and everything useless unless you're baking. I'm more than that. More than flesh. Then Warren morphs into fucking Glory.
Hooray!
Glory says, more than blood. I'm... You know, I honestly don't think there's a human word fabulous enough for me. Oh, my name will be on everyone's lips, assuming their lips haven't been torn off. But not just yet. That's all right, though. I also want to point out here, real quick, that the way the camera... You can start to see when the morph is about to happen, because here, we're on Glory, but the camera starts to shift up as she morphs into Adam. He says, I can be patient. Everything is well within parameters. She's exactly where I want her to be, and so are you, number 17. You're right where you belong. Then the mayor comes into frame.
Hooray! I was in the middle of drinking wine.
So what do you think? You get your soul back and everything be Jim Dandy? Soul slipperier than a greased weasel. So is that sentence. Why do you think I sold mine? Well, you probably thought you'd be your own man, but I respect that, but... Then the mayor transforms into Drusilla.
Yeah!
Breaking the mold here a bit, but I'll allow it. I actually think Drusilla works better here.
We discussed this because we were... when we finished season 6, mm-hmm. We off of the mic, we were talking about how much we enjoyed this scene and how it seems like it should have been Angelus, given what the pattern was.
Yeah.
But I think it works better.
Yeah.
Just all around better that it's Drusilla.
Me too. So Drusilla says, you never will. You'll always be mine. You'll always be in the dark with me, singing our little songs. You like our little songs, don't you? You've always liked them right from the beginning. And that's where we're going. Right back to the beginning.
Slay drama queen.
Yes, the master. Not the bang, not the word, the true beginning. This is a terrible impression, but it's good in spirit. And I'm dropping it now. The next few months are going to be quite a ride, and I think we're all going to learn something about ourselves in the process. Oh, that's nice. You'll learn you're a pathetic schmuck. Well, that's less nice. If it hasn't sunk in already, look at you trying to do what's right, just like her. You don't get it. It's not about right, not about wrong. And then the final transformation into Buffy. It's about power. End of episode. I got the hair on my arms just started raising up. It's a fucking fantastic scene. And it is. It really gets let me going. Like, oh, like, yeah, let's go. Like, this...
Yeah, I'm very much reminded about how when we got to The Gift, it was also the 100th episode of Buffy, mm-hmm. and then it opens up with the previously on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it's a small, like, you know, blink and you'll miss it bit of every single episode before it. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking at all the big bads,
yeah.
And, you know, the fact that they were able to, like, bring them back! Bring all those actors back was dope as shit.
Yeah. God, that actor plays Adam. Probably spent hours in the makeup chair for 5 seconds of screen time.
And then, like, Adam Bush is like, hurry it up, man, hurry it up.
No, it's really cool. And once again, it plays into that, like, back to the beginning approach. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I don't like Adam. I don't like Warren, but I still got a bit of a thrill seeing them.
If you didn't have them, it wouldn't have felt complete.
Right. It would have felt disingenuous to exclude them just because they're unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to introduce a game. A game we've played before.
Oh boy.
A game I nearly lost just now. right before doing that. So I think not surprising to anyone who's watched the show before, but if you are a first time watcher, this entity will return. So we're going to play our game that we play when we have a character who's introduced but not given a name right away. And we're gonna see which one of us slips up first and accidentally calls this character by their proper name. Historically, it's me.
Yeah, because you got both Lorne and Glory, didn't you?
I definitely got Lorne. What was hilarious was it happened in a Buffy episode.
Yeah. There was a hot minute I remember that I like said "glup," and then I stopped.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because it wasn't a Buffy episode. You said it, and then I just like looked at you, and you're just like, "What? Oh no!"
And that was the thing. It was like I was so hyper focused on it during Angel episodes, and I was like, "Yeah, it's never gonna happen." But I wasn't thinking about it during Buffy episodes. But no, I think it was. Yeah, you definitely had an episode where you said "gla," and we were like, "We're gonna count that as your loss." Unless I accidentally say the full name at some point later. And I did.
So, 2-0, Jason.
All right. That was Lessons. I think it's a really solid way to open the season. Like I said, the A-plot's nothing super remarkable, but it's not like... It's not bad by any means. And, you know, I feel like we check in with every character, even if they're short check-ins, like with... this episode is really focused on Dawn and Buffy.
But, yeah, we checked in with Anya, checked in with Spike.
Checked in with Willow. Xander's in the periphery of everything happening with Buffy. So it's a good, I feel like it's really set a good foundation for the season to build upon. New setting, new-ish setting.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah. This would be a 3-star episode for me, until that final scene, which bumps it up a full half star.
Literally what I was going to give it, and my reasoning for it as well. Nice. So, yeah.
All right. Anything else?
3.5 mouths full of cereal.
Yes.
Out of 5.
That was a funny line. I cooked cereal. How do you cook cereal? I put the cereal next to the milk. I saw it on the Food Channel.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Anything else to add before we...
I think I've mentioned before on the podcast that season 7 is not one that I really revisit too often. I have an opinion of season 7 from when I first watched it, like back in college. But I am looking forward to seeing how I feel about it overall now, especially after the deep dives that we've done.
Yeah.
As it was intended, this season premiere got me excited for what's to come.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jason, take us out.
Okie dokie. Thank you for joining us on Booze and Buffy. We'll be back next week with Buffy Season 7, Episode 2, Beneath You.
Mm-hmm. I'm Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at Harrison Alexander Kaufman and on Twitter at Harrison Kaufman. That's Kaufman.
And I'm Jason. You can find me on Instagram at YamaJ357.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Booze and Buffy, or you can email us at boozeandbuffy@gmail.com. The and is spelled out A-N-D on all of those instances.
And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from.
Each week, we'd like to give a shout out to some worthy cause or, you know, shout out something good going on in the world. I realized recently that I completely stole this from another podcast.
What, just giving the shout outs to charity?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that doesn't seem like it's something that...
Oh, no.
It's an original idea.
No, it's just I recently got... for Christmas, The Good Place on Blu-ray, the whole box set. By the way, all the episodes are the extended episodes. If you want to do a rewatch of The Good Place, get the Blu-ray box set. You'll get more content.
So, I know that we're like, you know, just building up on stuff here. But I actually did think about The Good Place recently because I get the Magic Spoon cereal. This is not an ad for Magic Spoon, by the way. Although I have joked about doing that without Harrison knowing, even though we don't get sponsored at all. But, you know, I tried to get some different flavors. And I got the chocolate chip cookie flavor cereal. And I had a bowl of it at work, and all I could think was like, this is nasty. And it made me think of when Eleanor tried the mystery shrimp flavor, and it was that exact same delivery. The mystery flavor is white chocolate, and it is nasty.
And then the surreptitious bite back. But no, so we were rewatching The Good Place, and we had also been looking for some new podcasts to listen to, and I remembered that there was an official Good Place podcast that tied into the show, hosted by Mark Evan Jackson, who played Sean, and they would each week he would have different actors, producers, writers, directors, philosophy consultants,
there you go.
Shit like that on the show. So we've been re-listening to that podcast. And at the end, he asks the guests, what's good? And they just say, what's good? And a lot of the time, they shout out, like, some sort of charity or something. And as we were listening to that first episode, I was like, oh, yeah! I totally cribbed that from this. And had completely forgotten. So, I just thought it was kind of funny. But anyway, you know, we are... we're ramping up to an election. Primaries are happening right now, despite the fact that it seems we're pretty much locked in to two candidates.
Well, but here's the thing, like, the presidential primary, yes, but there are plenty of other important races, and that's honestly something that you should, like, pay attention to. Is the presidential election big thing? Yes. Are, like, senator elections big thing? Yes. But local elections are important.
Exactly. And yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, you know, we're stuck with two candidates, one of whom I'm obviously really detest, and one of whom I'm like, well, okay, I guess that's what we got. And that's what it is. But, you know, there are other important races, and please educate yourself about those races, even, you know, especially at your local level and at the grassroots level, because this can't be fixed from the top down. So, yeah, that's what I'll say.
All right.
All right, as always, go slay.
And be gay for TV Woodside.